Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. We may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't. Nor do we tolerate sponsors. But we try to help connect you with some sanity, something resembling reality and sanity. And it's so good to have you with us, I suppose. All right. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed from the scene. That will be the main topic of the show, I think, because this is the big one that we've all been waiting for. But I want to start with the real science. Some real science, I think. I hope it's real. Yeah. I actually don't know if this is real as far as this specific report. This is a report from an Egyptian daily newspaper called Al Ahram. The author is Waji al-Sakhar, and according to his report, archaeologists have discovered ancient Egyptian coins bearing the name and image of the biblical Joseph. Yes, uh-huh. Now, that part I know is real. The biblical Joseph, I don't really need to find any coins to know that that's real and true. But it's pretty neat if they actually found some coins. The reporter says the archaeologist, a research team led by Dr. Saeed Muhammad Tabet, said that during his archaeological research on the Prophet Joseph, he had discovered in the vaults of the Egyptian Antiquities Authority and of the National Museum many charms from various eras before and after Joseph. Well, what they thought were charms, what had been taken for some sort of charm, turns out to be a coin, including one coin that bore his effigy as Minister of the Treasury in the Egyptian Pharaoh's court. According to Dr. Tibet, his studies are based on publications about the Third Dynasty, one of which states that the Egyptian coin of the time was called a deben. It was worth a fourth of a gram of gold. This coin is mentioned in a letter by a man named Totnehet, a royal inspector of the Nile bridges, in letters to his son. Yes, yes, in these letters he mentioned leasing lands in return for deben coins and agricultural produce. Dr. Saeed called on Egypt's Antiquities Council to promote research of these coins that bear the name of Egyptian pharaohs and gods, one of whom he claims is Joseph. And, well, there's no one within the Egyptian antiquities bureaucracy arguing with this fellow. So that's probably true. I got this. I'm having to bite my tongue. I downloaded this, he said, to his extremely attractive audio engineer. 12 steps to create your own pandemic off a Zero Hedge. Anyway, it pretty much asserts that the whole thing is fake. And when you actually read through it, you just think to yourself, you know, this is possible that this is all fake. I'm sorry. I don't want to be considered a conspiracy nut. But anyway, I may or may not get to that. And you know what? I'm going to post a link to it. You people can judge for yourselves. You know Zero Hedge has some crazy stuff in it. And they're not always right about everything. But when you start reading, but let's move on to something. Let's move on to something else. C.J. Pearson. Have you all heard of this fellow? C.J. Pearson is a conservative fella. He's a junior in high school, so he's a young guy. He had his, he had his Twitter account locked, which I'm not sure what that means. I'm not sure if that means they locked him out or if they locked everybody else out or if they... I think it means they blocked what he posted so that no one else could read it. And then he was not able to post again, which really doesn't mean that much, except that for whatever reason, people seem to think that Twitter rules the world.
Yeah.
If you can't get on Twitter, what you say doesn't matter. I'm not sure I understand the obsession with Twitter, but here we go. He posted the following. He posted the statement that every pedophile in America should be castrated. And then Twitter ruled that that post violated its abuse and harassment policy, i.e. the advocation of castration. Well, there you go. See, my extremely attractive audio engineer has already found one problem with the story, in that every pedophile in America should actually be executed. Anyway, he was forced. So what did this kid do? Twitter told this kid, if you don't delete this, you cannot have your Twitter account back and you cannot have access to your 250,000 followers. So the kid deleted the tweet in order to get his account back. And here's what he posted after deleting the post. He said, I refuse to change my political stances for Twitter and I will never cave to the mob. Okay. After he had just caved to the mob in order to get his Twitter. Maybe, am I missing something here? Maybe this he's playing that that three-dimensional chess they talk about. I'm not understanding it. Anyway, so I did a little research on C.J. Pearson because I had no idea who he is. I'm sure he has no idea who I am. But he's a high school junior, and he is, in my opinion, the prototypical godless Republican who is going to lose America to the leftist mob. His principles are limited government, fiscal conservatism, and economic opportunity. Those are the three pillars upon which young Mr. Pearson is willing to deposit civilization on those three pillars. And so that's why we're losing. Actually, that's why we lost. In fact, C.J. Pearson is just another indication, another symptom of the disease that lost us America. And now that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed from the scene, let's see, let's start with we have a press release from Judicial Watch. You fellas know Judicial Rot, Judicial Watch, Tom Fitton and his organization, who have been suing the government for my entire adult life. They've had at least one lawsuit going against the government. I like Judicial Watch. I think they have helped to uncover a lot of government malfeasance and other bad stuff. And so here's their release. For immediate release. I'm having a hard time speaking. You know what it is? It's probably the airline flights. I was on airplane number 12, 13... And then, unplanned, I got on airplane 14 and 15. But we'll get back to that. For immediate release, Judicial Watch, September 18th, 2020. Judicial Watch sends condolences to the family of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She had a wonderful judicial temperament that will always be remembered. That's directly from the desk of Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton. Then they immediately say Donald Trump now has a historic opportunity to nominate a conservative who will honor the Constitution and the rule of law across the full spectrum of constitutional issues, as if to imply that Ruth Bader Ginsburg perhaps had done something other than that. Honor the Constitution and the rule of law across the full spectrum of constitutional issues. Kind of a backhanded, I don't know, you send out your condolences. I would have just sent out the condolences and just let that one hang out there for like 24 hours. Just to show that I have judicial temperament. And what's that?
Why are you sending condolences?
I'm sure her family is sad. If they're capable of such emotions in the Ginsburg family, I'm not so sure. Anyway, so Judicial Watch acknowledges that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has passed from the scene, acknowledges that they feel bad for her family, and then they insult her. So I like them all right. They basically imply that she's not their type of judge. But now we go to Slate.com. And you know how Slate would... Can you guess how Slate would report on the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg? This is from the This Means War file. Because, folks, this means war. You may not fully comprehend the impact of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's impact on the floor there at her apartment, or however that all happened. She was apparently surrounded by loved ones. But this is big. All right, she began her legal career in 1959. Isn't this strange how I just talked about 1950, how they came for the fathers in the 1950s with the legalized pornography? Anyway, Ruth Bader Ginsburg probably single-handedly more responsible for more destruction of the American family than any one person in the United States in our history. Listen to how Slate describes America in 1959. It was a nation of gender apartheid. Women were formerly regarded as second-class citizens whose duties consisted of finding a husband, raising children, and maintaining a home. That's it. And that's how Ruth felt about all of that. Oh, and also women had no right to control their reproductive lives. No right to protect you. All right. The law viewed women as vulnerable and in need of protection. Huh, imagine that. Even Chief Justice Earl Warren's liberal Supreme Court upheld at one point that Florida should exclude women from mandatory jury service, and in the ruling wrote that a woman is still regarded as the center of home and family life. The United States Supreme Court actually wrote that in 1961. And that offended Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So all you women who've had to go to jury duty, well, you know who you can thank? You can thank, actually, not just Ruth Bader Ginsburg, because Ruth Bader Ginsburg was the head of the ACLU's Women's Rights Project. An organization that she put together to destroy all that is good and holy and to attack everything upon which our society stands. One of the reasons America is collapsing right now into the hands of the leftist maniacs is because Ruth Bader Ginsburg won. She's evil, evil woman. Let's see. I just want to go through. She immediately started filing lawsuits primarily against the government, and she argued a lot in front of the Supreme Court. And she basically pulled the Supreme Court to the left. That was her desire her entire life. She did it from both sides of the barrist, or whatever it's called there, where the lawyers stand behind. Forgive me, I never went to college. From both sides of the bar? I don't know. Anyway, with remarkable speed, according to Slate, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her colleagues set to work at the ACLU's Women's Rights Project to attack and destroy everything that made women special or different in any way, is really what she was devoted to. Let's see. She worked to end lawmakers' ability to justify measures that basically acknowledged that men and women were different and had different roles. But she didn't. She said that was discrimination based on sex. And even worse than that, sexist stereotypes. And the court acknowledged in 1973 that such romantic paternalism had the practical effect of putting women not on a pedestal, but in a cage. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg viewed someone who wanted to find a husband, raise children, and maintain a home. She compared that to someone locked in a cage. Why? Because she's a maniac. She was insane. She was evil down to the core of her black little heart. In 1996, she invalidated the Virginia Military Institute's male-only policy 2017. She was a part of Sessions versus Morales Santana, clarifying that new insights and societal understandings can reveal unjustified inequity that once passed unnoticed and unchallenged. So everything that's happening with Antifa, everything that's happening with Black Lives Matter out in the streets, this accusation against America of systemic, whatever you want to call it, racism, discrimination, sexism, she's the mother of it. 2015, Obergefell versus Hodges gives homosexuals the right to marry each other, act like they're married in front of God and everybody. Bostock versus Clayton County codified LGBTQ discrimination as a form of sex discrimination. And Slate goes on to remind us that Ruth Bader Ginsburg rarely wrote the majority opinions. No. She condescended to let her male colleagues author the watershed opinions that destroyed the American family. Why? Because it's a humiliation exercise. Ruth Bader Ginsburg made the boys get down on their knees and write the opinions, and they did. 2007, Gonzalez v. Carhart. The majority reason that the government may need to protect women from obtaining a procedure they may later regret. That was partial birth abortion. You all remember that. Declaring that respect for human life. Listen to this. In that decision, the Supreme Court accidentally stumbled backwards into writing this. Respect for human life finds an ultimate expression in a mother's love for her child. Well, Ginsburg would hear none of that. In her dissent, she castigated her colleagues for relying upon ancient notions about a woman's place in the family, notions that have long since been discredited. In the mind of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the idea of the nuclear family and a patriarchal society that protects women is an ancient notion that has long since been discredited. And so from there, we are going to go and try anarchy for a while. Let's see how that works out. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to everyone except Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who won't be joining us today. From what I understand, she's going to be late. I hated Ruth Bader Ginsburg in life, and I pity her in death, because right now she is finding out that the God that she worked so hard against her entire life, she just found out that he won. She had been winning for 75 years. Winning. She won every battle she got into, and yet he won in the end. Kind of ironic. All right, so this means war. By the way, the left will do anything to stop Donald Trump from placing Ruth Bader Ginsburg up to and including actual warfare in the streets. There will be a shooting war. All right. Anyway, they are willing to kill people. I'll just put it that they will be willing to kill people in order to prevent Donald Trump from replacing Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court. Meanwhile, let's go to the, well, should I talk about, what else to talk about here? I guess I'll wait. I don't know. You people don't care about my personal life. Go to the politics file, where up in New Hampshire, a man who describes himself as a transsexual Satanist anarchist.
Okay.
he ran for sheriff and he won.
Wow.
He won the Republican. I'm sorry. He won the Republican nomination.
Wow.
His campaign slogan. Well, I can't say it on the air. His campaign slogan, well, I'm just not going to say it. Interviewed after his victory, the man said, quote, "I didn't think that so many voters were just oblivious," he said to the New York Post. And, well, apparently they are. He goes by the title High Priestess of the Reformed Satanic Church. I thought this was a man. Oh. I apologize. It's a biological man. See, you can't say a man anymore now. When you're typing up a story about a man, you have to say it's a biological man. Because he describes himself as a transsexual Satanist anarchist. Republicans in the state of New Hampshire tried to thwart his candidacy, but failed. Did I give this fellow's name? Aria DeMesso. His Twitter account says he is hashtag godless and hashtag lawless. And he won an election for sheriff, giving us insight into the state of democracy in America. All right. Maybe it's a joke. I don't know. If it's a joke, it's only funny, not in the ha-ha funny kind of way. Kind of the creepy, scary, wow, is this really the end of everything type of funny, which isn't really very funny at all. Over in Chicago, Sincere Williams had robbed three stores. He's 18 years old. And last week, yeah, the prosecutor said he robbed three stores. He had robbed a gun shop back in March. But back in March, he stole 14 handguns before being apprehended by the police and the owner of the gun shop from which he was stealing the guns. So he robs a gun shop, gets caught, ends up in jail for a minute, but then he was put back out on the streets. And that's when he decided to go and rob some stores, you see. And one of the stores he robbed was a Walgreens, where Olga Marie Calderon worked. And he killed her. He was participating in the riots back. No, this was before the riots. I apologize. This is back in March. He was obviously not obeying the stay-at-home order. He was robbing a gun store. But maybe this was before the lockdown. So maybe he was just an innocent on his way to Bible study, and he happened upon a gun store and just wanted to go in and clean the guns. So now he's murdered a woman in a Walgreens. Yeah. Stabbed her to death. Stabbed her over a dozen times. I'm sorry, nearly a dozen times. And then calmly walked out of the store covered in her blood. And he left her to die on the floor of a Walgreens. No word on if Olga Marie Calderon was black enough for her life to matter. No, we're not sure if. Well, you know, her life mattered. I don't know what color she was. I don't care. Her life mattered. And the life of Sincere Williams, that's the 18-year-old man who stabbed her to death, his life matters too. Olga Marie Calderon was a woman that found herself vulnerable. Didn't I just talk about the Supreme Court called women? Oh, yes, that's the idea that a woman is vulnerable. That goes against Ruth Bader Ginsburg's life's work. In fact, the reason Olga Marie Calderon was working at a Walgreens instead of at home raising her children where she would be secure and protected by a husband. Instead, she's out at Walgreens, vulnerable to a man like Sincere Williams who stabs her to death. Thanks, Ruth. Thanks for making women get out there and act like men and earn like men and risk like men. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg is answering right now to the living God for the death of this woman, because she was a part of the entire conspiracy to drive women out of the home and into the workplace that started shortly after World War II. An unhealthy, psychotic fixation on women had to be exactly like men for some reason. It started sometime after World War II. It became an obsession to destroy femininity. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg did all she could to destroy femininity. And in a temporal sense, she won a lot. But at the end of the day, she lost. God won. But Olga Marie Calderon and her family were victims along the way. Get out there and get to work, sweetie. Yeah, it's late night, it's at Walgreens, but you're tough. Don't let anyone tell you you're not every bit as tough and good as a man. Get out there and get to work. Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Rot and burn in hell, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. How about that? Meanwhile, we go to, Chicago? Is it Chicago? Philadelphia, sorry. Three gunmen fired at least 55 shots, killing a teenager and a young man, injuring three other people at a Philadelphia playground. So a mass shooting erupts in the midst of everything else we've got going on. Three gunmen chased after at least one man, trapped him in the playground area and shot him. Also shot two other men. Juana Robles, a live-in nurse, was caring for a patient in the neighborhood. She said she heard a lot of shots. She says, they told me it was like 50 shots. 50 shots? Why so many shots? That's horrible. She says, you're safe nowhere. She said, I'm ready to retire. I don't think I'm going to wait. Come on. Come on, Juana. Aren't you tough enough? Huh? Get out there and get to work. Going to work in the middle of a war zone, for crying out loud. I don't know what else I have to say on this. It's from the Domestic Tranquility File. You try to be a nurse for an old person in Philadelphia, and there's 50 bullets flying around your head. This poor woman is terrified. Thanks a lot, Ruth. You've really improved the lives of women. Bill de Blasio in New York, we find him in the politics file, where he often finds himself piled. He's announcing that he will furlough himself and his staff starting, I don't know if he started this Wednesday or last Wednesday. Basically, there's a $9 billion shortfall in the budget. Gee, I wonder what happened, Bill. So he says he's going to furlough himself and his staff. Yes, yes. Last month, he warned that New York City may be forced to lay off as many as 22,000 government employees due to revenue lost during the global coronavirus pandemic. And that's the words he used. So, hey, Bill, it wasn't the global coronavirus pandemic that ruined New York. It was you. You did it, not the global. New York would have survived the pandemic. In fact, New York has survived the pandemic. It's just that you destroyed it in the midst of it in your fear and cowardice and selfishness. De Blasio, of course, is blaming the federal government for a lack of money in the city that he has closed. He has ordered everyone to stop working and stop paying taxes, and it's someone else's fault that he has no tax revenue. De Blasio has no immediate plans to cut his $250,000 a year salary, and, of course, his wife. It has been discovered now that she employed six undisclosed staff members. that at taxpayer expense, and, you know, there's not necessarily any need to look at any of this or any of that, folks. Please, this way, to the egress. I heard Bill de Blasio, I think he contributed to the recording there. I think he was a part of that whole part. That was Bill himself. All right, Bill, there you go. And he remains in office and will be reelected. Having destroyed the place, he'll be reelected, which is just sad to... Meanwhile... one of the big stars over at Netflix has been charged with producing child pornography. Shocker. Really? Netflix? Child pornography? Huh. Never saw that coming. This fella's name is Jerry Harris, and he's famous outside of the McBurney compound. Obviously, the FBI says he's under investigation for allegedly soliciting sex and photos from twin boys in Texas. He denies the allegations. And then the FBI has screenshots that are, well, doesn't look good for Jerry. And also, he's a pervert. Harris became famous after appearing on a docu-series called Cheer. The docu-series followed a college cheer team's journey to the national championship. Turns out he's a perv. College cheerleader, a pervert? No way. Never saw that coming. Wow. And so it's no wonder that people think that there's a cabal of rich, famous celebrities who molest children. Because so many of them keep getting busted for... Well, by the way, if this guy's convicted, he should be put to death. Yeah. Not castrated. Yeah. Although, if the kid's parents wanted to start there, I'm all for that. But it's going to end in his death. That's what you should do with child molesters. And people who produce or engage in any promotion of pornographic material, especially involving children, they should be put to death. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, by the way, I will have to look and see if Ruth Bader Ginsburg ever wrote or spoke about child molesters. I'll have to do my research on that. I don't know. I might forget after this. I might forget about Ruth Bader Ginsburg after this. Although, I don't know. I think this means war. This means war, folks. The Civil War was already coming. It's already started. And now this is going to really kick it up into, that's just my fear. I hope I'm wrong about that. Because I'm a naturally pessimistic person. But just having seen what happened with Kavanaugh, I mean, that was almost... that was a cultural event. That was a moment like none we've ever had. Nothing like that has ever happened before. Basically, the public lynching of a man and his entire career. And now, this is the big one. This is RBG, the notorious RBG. Yeah, I don't see how we avoid physical combat. That's how strongly I believe the left is dedicated to ensuring the continued unrestrained murder of innocent people. There can be no restraint now. There shall be no restraint, and they are willing to kill people to keep that. I mean, they're already killing people every day. So they're completely capable of killing people. They prefer to kill people who can't defend themselves. But they will start killing us. The people who want to stop them. They will start killing us. I think this is going to drive them into a frenzy of madness that's going to result in violence. Now, meanwhile, we go to the real religion file. Should I do that or should I talk about my airplane? So I got on an airplane. And I flew to an undisclosed location and then wanted to return home from that location. And so I got on another airplane, and at some point I was nodding off, and my mask had slipped below my nose. I was wearing a cloth mask that a restaurateur had given me because I didn't have a mask. Because I try not to participate in cult humiliation rituals unless I absolutely have to. And obviously, to fly on an airplane, I had to. So I played along for a little while, but as I was nodding off, the mask slipped below my nose, and the person in the seat next to me actually tapped me on the shoulder, grabbed her mask, and tugged it up. Right? She didn't speak to me. She just gave me that universal, put your mask up over your nose. And how do you do that? You take your filthy hands and you touch your filthy mask and you pull it up over your filthy nose to indicate to me that you want me to pull my mask up. And so I told her, I said, do you have any training in sanitary procedure or bloodborne pathogen cross-contamination prevention? And she said, she wiggled her head. And I said, well, I do. And I said, you just touched your mask. You need to change your mask. And I wasn't yelling but anyway, she immediately, she pinged the male stewardess. And the male stewardess came over and she said, sir, this man is making me uncomfortable. He won't pull up his mask. Now, at this point, I had gone ahead and pulled up the mask because I really didn't want to stay in this town anymore. I wanted to leave. Come home to my extremely attractive audio engineer. And the male stewardess chastised me. Sir, if you're going to ride on this aircraft, you're going to wear that mask properly. And at that point, I stood up and I realized I am not going to fly on this airplane because I'm about to say something. I'm about to say something. So I said, sir, I said, you don't even know how to wear a mask properly. I do. I'm actually trained. You don't know. You have no right to tell me anything about how to wear a mask. And I said, you know what? I've got something I'm going to tell you people. And the male stewardess said, sir, you can speak your mind if you'd like, but you will be removed from this aircraft. And I said, so if I speak my mind, I will be removed from this aircraft. That's right, sir. So at that point, the mask came off and I threw it at him. And I said, all right, I tell you what, I'm going to speak my mind and you go ahead and call the police because I am going to be removed from this aircraft. People started yelling at me. And I said, don't worry, I'm not going to delay your flight. I'm going to be out of here in about 10 seconds. But before I leave, I'm going to tell you people that you're all doing something against your best interest every day, all day long, and it's not healthy. You got these filthy rags on your faces. So I go now I'm being escorted, right? Being escorted off the plane. And the whole way down, I say, look at that mask. Look at that mask. This guy's wearing a bandana for crying out loud. It's a bandana. I said, none of you people have any medical training at all. I do. And I know this is all ridiculous and ludicrous. And I just want to let you all know that you've all lost your minds. You're being led around by your nose. And the whole time the male stewardess is trying, sir, please calm down. And I said, I'm not yelling. Maybe I was yelling.
Yeah, you were.
I probably might have been yelling at that. But I had to be louder than the people who were cursing me.
Yeah.
Telling me to get off the plane. So I get all the way to the door of the plane and I realize I left my carry-on bag in the overhead compartment. And now I have no mask. Everyone on the plane wants to kill me. And I said, you know what? I got to get my bag. And the male stewardess and the female, you got a really fat, ugly lady and a skinny homo. They basically put their shoulders together and the man said, it's too late for that, sir. And I said, really? I don't think so. And I just busted through their shoulders with my shoulder. And I walked back and I got my bag. And I think I had a few more choice words with a few. I think I said, wipe the filth off of your dirty mask. You just touched your mask. Anyway, I was removed from the plane. And I got on a train. I went to the next terminal. I bought a ticket. I got another airplane. So to me, it was worth the investment. If you're going to speak your mind, you'll be removed from this aircraft. That's like, okay, buddy, you know what? Oh, and I told the male stewardess, I said, you know what? You're a loser. You're going to be doing this every day for the rest of your life. You're going to put your mask on and you're going to go and you're going to get on one of these planes because you're a pathetic loser. I said, I get to get off the plane and live like a normal person, but not you. Enjoy your pathetic life as a pathetic loser. Because by then I was upset. All right. But anyway, I was removed and then I got on another plane and I came home. So there. So that is now aircraft number 12, 13, 14, and 15 that I've been on since the coronavirus pandemic erupted across the globe, and I'm feeling all right. I suppose not that it's an accurate gauge of anything. So there. Israel. So Israel has locked down for 3 weeks, starting on Rosh Hashanah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Israeli government, to celebrate the Jewish New Year, has locked everyone in their houses again. Why? Because there's positive cases. That's why. Positive cases, and they're terrified. Folks, there are almost 9 million people who live in Israel. Fewer than 1,200 people have actually died. And I'm just telling you, this is the end of civilization. We never go on like this. Is not going to work, people. Something has to change dramatically. Because if you give these tyrannical maniac socialist creeps, like the ones who run Israel, if you give them the right to lock us in our houses every time we get scared of a germ, this never stops. We need to seriously reconsider. I don't know, Mel. I guess we just stand back and let it all collapse. And there will be a few of us around who haven't lost our minds and we'll pick up the pieces. I don't know. We'll try. For a little bit of encouragement, let's go to the Real Religion file, where a court in China has summoned a house church pastor and his wife for not sending their children to the public school. That's right. They have been arrested for homeschooling their children. That's right. They're scheduled to appear in court this coming week. Officials have charged the couple with custody disputes. Yes, they're disputing the fact that they have custody of their children with the government, who asserts they have custody. And so now they're going to have to argue about it in court, whether the government owns their kids or whether they own their kids. Chinese government is placing deeply restrictive rules over churches seeking to reopen amid the coronavirus pandemic, also, by the way. So this pandemic is being used as a tool to destroy the church and the free market in China and in New York, and in Colorado and in California and in almost everywhere. And in Israel, this couple, do I have their names? The pastor's name is Yu Guanda of Daiquan. Okay, I can't pronounce the name of his church or the town he lives in, but that's because he's Chinese and I'm American. Pastor Yu Guanda. This guy's got guts. This guy's not just assuming the fetal position and begging the government to allow him to survive. He's insisting on home educating his children in the face of a prison sentence, likely. Possibly death. This guy's the real deal. Let's see. Congregations, listen to this. If you want to reopen your church in China, your Christian church, that is, amid the coronavirus pandemic, your church must meet a 42-item list of prerequisites, including orders to intensify patriotic education and to study China's religious policy. Reopening churches are also compelled to promote the Four Requirements campaign, which is all about the sinicization of religion, basically replacing God with the Chinese Communist Party. So you can reopen your church, you just can't preach the gospel anymore. And you know, this is eerily reminiscent of what's happening in America right now, where in some states, allegedly, churches are not supposed to be open. And pastors are going along with it. Bitter Winter, a magazine covering religious liberty issues in China, defined the four requirements like this. Here's what you're required to do to open your church. Ritually raising the national flag, often while singing the national anthem. Teaching beliefs about and promoting the Chinese constitution, laws, and regulations. Preaching and promoting the core values of the Chinese Communist Party. And promoting China's excellent traditional culture. I mean, it sounds like Make America Again. It's a lot like Make America Great Again. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. See, is that what we'll have to do in America to open the church? We'll have to hoist the flag while singing the national anthem? To celebrate the laws and the Constitution? And promote traditional culture? I mean, this sounds like America. It's as if we've been taken over by the Chinese in a silent coup. I mean, we did copy their lockdown, right? I mean, we watched them lock down Wuhan, we watched the virus spread, and so we said, hey, let's all do that. Mm-hmm. So who is ascendant here, do you think? Is it the United States and Western Europe and the traditional allied powers, or is it the communist Chinese who are ascendant? I think it's obvious who is ascendant here, and it's very sad to see. But that's okay. There will be some of us. We'll not wet our pants and lose our minds, and we'll be here to pick up the pieces for you people. One of them is probably going to be Jim Caviezel. From the This Means War file, Jim Caviezel went on Fox News promoting his new movie. It's called Infidel. It's about the persecution and murder of Christians in Iran. He went on he did an interview on Fox in which the author here at PJ Media. He says there's a moment where Caviezel almost comes out of his chair and something takes over his whole body. And what's rolling off his tongue effortlessly is one of the greatest arguments against the philosophy of appeasement I've ever heard. Has anyone checked Winston Churchill's grave? Is it empty? What just happened? And so I'll just read this word for word from Jim Caviezel, who's an actor. He's the actor who played Jesus in The Passion of the Christ, just so you know. So we haven't watched the movie. That might be the last movie we watched, actually. We haven't watched a movie in at least 10 years. And so, anyway, that's who this guy is. Well, here's what he said to the Fox News interviewer when asked about this, basically the cancel culture. And the idea that you have to appease the mob so that you can survive and go back to work and live. Caviezel says, every lesson in history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement, and this is the specter our well-meaning Christian liberal friends, our priests and bishops and pastors, refuse to face. That their policy of accommodation is appeasement, and it gives us no choice between peace and war, only between fight and surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to move back and retreat, we will have to face the final demand, the final ultimatum. And what then? Voices pleading for peace at any price, or better read than dead, or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet? Well, therein lies the road to war, because those voices do not speak for the rest of us. You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under Pharaoh? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Ridge have refused to fire the shot heard around the world? The martyrs of history were not fools, and our beloved dead who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis did not die in vain. Where then lies the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all, and you and I have the courage to tell our enemies there is a price we will not pay, and there is a point beyond which evil must not advance. And you are one with the cause, and a reason to be. You were a fighter for peace on this earth, and you were never afraid. You put your life on the line, and you were always alone out on the sea. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. As we thank Jim Caviezel for his, I would call it an epic soliloquy, and something that the people at Fox News need to hear. Talk. They've been the ones accommodating. They've been the ones appeasing. They've been the ones tolerating. And Caviezel doesn't name the thing, that malevolence that we must appease. He doesn't name it, and I don't think he really needs to. I think it's for everyone who stands with him, it's obvious. And maybe we don't even want the other side to know that we see things that clearly. Anyway, in the meantime, from the Decline and Fall file, Kid Rock performed at a Donald Trump rally with Don Jr. and Kimberly Guilfoyle. Tell me this isn't the end of the world.
Is this the
Pancake House? Well, yeah, was this at a Waffle House? Kid Rock is now, by the way, they call him a legendary rocker.
I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm not sure who's in charge of classifying things historically, but legendary rocker, I'm sorry. No.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, but there he was with Donald Trump Jr. and Kimberly Guilfoyle in Michigan, where he encouraged the crowd to make some damn noise.
Okay.
And the crowd roared. And then he went on to curse and a profanity laden, just, okay. He played several songs. Okay. So you have, in addition to having to suffer through his, profanity laden, political speech, you also had to hear him play songs. he says, I'm not going to get too political, but, then he cursed again. I want to see everybody do well, he said. I don't believe you make the poor rich by making the rich poor. And then he swears again. And then Donald Trump Jr. got up and gave a speech as if he didn't just allow a profane redneck loser piece of garbage on stage. Okay. But this is it. This is all over. Kid Rock, he did perform in front of a giant American flag. Uh-huh. And asked the crowd, do you believe that you live in the greatest country in the world? He says, cover the kids' ears. I started out with no, and then he goes on to swear some more, and it's just, yeah, that's... A Kid Rock has now become a conservative. That's the... Okay. Meanwhile, let's go to some real religion news out of Nigeria. A 13-year-old boy, excuse me, has been sentenced to 10 years in prison for blasphemy in Kano State, which practices Sharia. And the court convicted Omar Farouk of blasphemy back on August 10th for using foul language toward Allah. The same Sharia court that sentenced Farouk also sentenced 22-year-old Yahya Sharif to death by hanging last month for blasphemy. Yahya was found guilty of insulting Islam's prophet Muhammad in a song he circulated via WhatsApp. And he was convicted the same day by the same judge as a young 13-year-old Farouk. Blasphemy, by the way, is not recognized by Nigerian law, and it's not in the constitution or anything like that. But they have these Sharia courts that actually administer their brand of twisted and perverted justice. And so you got a 13-year-old been sentenced to 10 years in prison, and a guitar player who's threatened with death, who'll probably be executed in Nigeria. While over here, we've got Kid Rock opening for the president. Okay. All right. From the widespread tyranny file over in Nashville, coronavirus cases may have been so low that the mayor's office they decided they had to keep it a secret. Yeah. Fox 17, the local station there, published emails between the mayor and the health department, and they revealed that the low number of coronavirus cases coming out of bars and restaurants, well, the mayor didn't like that. They expected the bars and the restaurants to start producing positive cases, and it just wasn't happening. And they discussed how to cover it up. The one message from the health department asks, quote, "This isn't going to be publicly released, right? This is just for the mayor's office." "Correct," says the mayor. "This is not for public consumption." I'm sorry, that's not the mayor. That's one of his advisors, Ben. A month earlier, the health department was asked about a rumor that there were only 80 cases traced to bars and restaurants. So a reporter asks if there have been over 20,000 positive tests and only 80 were from bars. Doesn't that mean restaurants and bars aren't a very big problem? The health department asked 5 health department officials, "Please advise how you recommend I respond." So this was the question from the reporter, and they have an email exchange on how do we reply to this? Well, why don't you just say, yeah, it should be fairly obvious. That's not that big of a problem, but we can't say that. Good news travels slow. Got to keep people scared. All right, now meanwhile, in the midst of the big flinch, we've got Sean Fucht. I don't know. He's a missionary and a guitar player. And he says that there are worship protests exploding across America. So he says something's happening in America and it should sound the alarm for every confessing Christian. Hostile efforts ongoing to suppress the First Amendment rights of all people to exercise our faith. In unprecedented acts of government-authorized injustice, Christians are being told they cannot gather for worship, they cannot sing songs, and they cannot observe church ordinances. Uh-huh. We are being told we cannot worship in public spaces while violent protesters are taking over the streets, and they're given license to occupy and destroy even sections of our cities. Churches are being covered in graffiti and burned. And Sean Fucht, the missionary guitar player, says, "Never did I dream that this would happen." Well, listen, Sean, you must not have been paying attention. Because some of us have been, by the way, people who have been called extremists and haters, we've been warning you of this for decades. We've been predicting that the Christian churches would be destroyed and the Christians would be thrown in prison. We've actually been warning this about you. While you were playing guitar and singing about how you love everybody, we've been trying to warn you that they're going to come and burn the whole world down. And we've been called hateful and not inclusive enough, and we're not seeker-sensitive. Anyway, now, all right, now I guess I don't want to be too hard on a kid. I don't know. I haven't heard him play. I wonder if he's any good. He says in Seattle, a self-proclaimed Satanist came to protest his worship, and he met God and gave his life to Jesus. Well, that's wonderful. This fellow is planning what he calls worship protests. He's got gatherings planned in Madison, Minneapolis, Kenosha, Chicago, many more, culminating in Washington, D.C. on October 25th. He says, I refuse to seek permission from politicians to adhere to preach. Anyway, he says, God is not finished with America yet. Yeah, I think you're wrong, kiddo. I think he's done with us for a while. I think he's going to leave us to our own devices for a little while. But I appreciate you having... So the fact that we have to call our church services a protest, I don't know if this kid understands that that's acquiescing. That is flinching. That is not... We need to call it church. And we need to go to church in militant fashion, prepared to be thrown in prison and even killed. We shouldn't have to disguise our church service as a protest so that the powers that be will allow us to exist. We should just say this is over. We're going back to church. The health emergency that you were all scared of, obviously that's no longer a problem. But anyway, and we should go back to church, but we can't because, I don't know. Anyway, meanwhile, from the personhood file, primates could be given constitutional rights in Switzerland. The vote has been given the go by the country's Supreme Court. Yep. The initiative is asking for the introduction of specific rights for non-human primates. And this is all being sponsored by an organization. It's a bunch of crazy people. The group, it's a rights group called Sentience Politics. They say non-human primates have a fundamental interest in their life and physical and mental integrity. However, this is hardly taken into account by the Swiss animal welfare legislation. This is why societies collapse and die, because you've got ignorant children hell-bent on murdering the most innocent and defenseless human beings while obsessing over the rights of a primate. This is why civilizations collapse, right? This is why the Greeks no longer rule the world. This is why the Romans no longer rule. This is why Great Britain is just a hollow shell of its former self. This is why children end up able to march down the streets spewing the most vulgar profanity in the face of the law enforcement. How to create your own pandemic. Step one, find some vague criteria for what constitutes symptoms. You know, tiredness, headache, aches and pains, cough, fever, tiredness. Then come up with a test for it. And then start testing people. Anyway, I'm going to post to this because it's a bit... Anyway, it's interesting. Should I do the hypersonic? Here's a good one. The U.S. Air Force used a hypervelocity projectile to shoot down a cruise missile. Dr. Will Roper, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Acquisition, said, a tank shooting down a cruise missile is awesome. Well, I agree with that. That's pretty cool. He says, you're not supposed to be able to shoot down a cruise missile with a tank, but yes, you can if the bullet is smart enough. HVP smart bullet, that's hypervelocity projectile, is groundbreaking technology. Revolutionized the modern battlefield. They were developed to fire out of an electromagnetic rail gun, but they've shifted to firing out of conventional guns like artillery pieces found on the battlefield. What's so good about this? Well, the average high-velocity projectile costs about $85,000, whereas a Tomahawk missile costs $1.5 million. And if you can shoot down a million-dollar missile with an $85,000, that's pretty cool, that's all. So what does all this mean? Well, not much if we can't keep civilization from falling into the hands of the madmen. This just means that eventually we'll be shooting these at each other, unfortunately. All right. I guess that's it. Folks, I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio, at AmericanRightToLife.com, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.